you ready to turn right? Just toss you rockin'! Wow!
Podcast Rock City.
All right, Joe is having a little mental technical difficulties today, as well as computer technical difficulties. So I think maybe Lee and I will take over the show. Joe,
what's up, everybody?
Welcome to Podcast Rock City. I'm Joey, your host. Thank God. Right above me is the one and only Goddess of Thunder, Lee.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, say hi, Lee.
Hello.
And we have a very, very special guest tonight. The man responsible for the KISS Army.
It's him.
Welcome,
He's
Mr. Bill Starkey.
He did it.
So, Bill, I know it's been a few minutes to try to get everyone connected here. We're finally together.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on. It's an honor.
I'm flattered. This is great. This is great. Hi, Lee.
So obviously we'll go back to the beginnings of your story I can't imagine anyone doesn't know your story by now, but we will talk about the beginnings, but let's start at the end. Were you at the show the other night?
Yeah, it was fabulous.
Amazing.
Paul called me, pointed me out during the sound check and during the concert. It was pretty cool, twice in one night. So
what?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, I mean, you can find it on my Facebook. You should be able to find it on other people's Facebooks. People have been kind enough to send me their copies. Well, you know, when they do the Q&A during the sound check, it's not that I plant people in the audience, but somebody came up and said, you know, tell us about the KISS Army. And when he gets up there and he starts telling like the first few lines about it, and he says, this guy and his name was, and before he could get it out, I yell, Bill Starkey, and other people did it with me, and he pointed, he says, he's here, and he called me an icon, and then funny thing towards the end, after he told the KISS Army story, the KISS version, he said, I still can't believe you're here, or something like that, and then it was funny, so I don't know why he didn't expect me to hear, maybe because I just don't make a big deal of being there when I am there, and then during the show, he gave a real cool speech, and he just knows how to play the audience, and you're in Indiana, so what a better way to remind people of their roots. So yeah, it was cool to get Brad to mention me two times. So
I gotta ask you, do they roll out the red carpet for you? Because if they don't, they should.
Yes, you should have been VIP, baby.
I don't know if they do that for anybody. I think the only thing they do that for is people that pay for those things. And that's understandable because it's the way things are going. There's only a few more shows left. I don't know if anybody gets. I bet if Ace and Peter walked in there, they would get any more perks than anybody else. That has nothing to do with disputes. I'm just saying I'm not sure that anybody gets what you might call the red carpet treatment, unless that's an option to pay for it. Did you get the red carpet VIP or did you get the, you know? And it just so happened he pointed me out twice in one day. And then he's great. It's great.
No, obviously, that's an honor to have him point you out. But I do think, especially now that they're, you know, in their little final run here, I think they would have given you more than you think they would have, you know, to reminisce and to honor you and to make, you know, your send off, you know, just as well as their send off, something to remember. I think you should have gone over and above and contacted them early and made sure they knew you were going to be there. And I think they would have done more than you think.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. Somebody did tell them. I know the day before, I think a friend, I knew that a guy was going to take me to the show, and I was his guest, and he wanted to do a thing where a plaque was made and for the band to present me a plaque on stage, either during a sound check or whenever. And he gave them the plaque early in the morning. And I think he even talked to Doc McGee about it. And Doc came over like sometime during the middle of the sound check and shook my hand. But I never was awarded any plaque, but I was mentioned. And I really think that because there's so much stuff going up on that stage, the pyro and the trap door with the piano and everything, I really think for safety reasons, and we're living in such a litigious society that for safety reasons, nobody's going up on that stage. I don't care if you're the president or whoever, and they're going to get an award. Nobody's going to go up on that stage. I mean,
you could be right.
Theory, but yeah. I look at it that way. It's probably a safe thing. And, you know, there's a big space between where Paul is in the stage and the pit and all that. So, I mean, I'm quite content to get called out twice in one day.
That once is wonderful.
Yeah, it once was enough. But you know, you guys, I mean, I have been given so much attention for many years. I've been on four VH1 specials and with Lee even. And I'm in both history books. After the sound check yesterday, a guy came and got me, and I guess I might as well tell you guys, they're filming this, and he's doing a documentary, and he was, I don't know the guy's name off the top of my head, but he was, he did the A&E thing. He introduced himself and said, you got some time, let's go back, and I'd like to interview for this thing. And so we went to the back of the arena after the sound check was over, and they had pushed everybody out but us. And he had the sound crew people turn the music down so that he could hear me, put a mic on me. And then we talked about my involvement and basically what happened with the Kiss Army. And it was kind of cool to get in that. I hopefully might be in this documentary as well.
Hmm. That's great. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, obviously, with, you know, they're ending now and the end of the road, whatever that means, is less than a week away. What's your feelings about it?
Very melancholy. Several people told me that I took several pictures before and during the show and all that. And so many people complained, said, well, you weren't smiling. I just had mixed feelings about all that. I mean, Kiss put on a phenomenal show. And I think, was it maybe because they had a 4 or 5 day rest? I don't know, because 24 hours before the show, I really didn't think it was going to happen. Cause I really couldn't see Paul recovering. And he got up and he said during the beginning of the sound check, he goes, it's good to be upright for a change. And he sounded great. And like I said, and this was probably the best seats I've ever had at any rock concert. This guy set me up really good. I was in the second row, center stage.
Sweet.
And things are so visual with Kiss now. You know, we used to always hope that, or wondered why Kiss didn't do videos and all that, because they were such a visual band. But now this concert, the way things are set up, everything's so visual. I mean, like, they're playing something from Rock and Roll Over, and you see the huge Rock and Roll Over symbol behind them.
Yes.
The visuals are just really amazing. Of course, the pyros and all that are great too, but just the lights, the colors, and everything. I mean, I caught myself many times just watching the backdrops instead of the band, and/or taking pictures myself because. And like I said, the weird thing is what there's only four more shows left. Chicago, Baltimore, and it's the other thing that makes me sad is it's like, man, you guys really got it together right now, and. There's only four more to go. And then what, you know, cause it's just like, I hate for other people not to be able to see what I saw. And some may say they had seen it, but that's what's weird. It's like, you know, it's like a football team that's on a winning streak and you don't get into the playoffs to show what you've accomplished because it stops, you know? I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. But so, you know, good luck to those people in Baltimore, Chicago, and, a matter of fact, the gentleman that set me up for the indie show, he's got tickets for the second show in New York City. And I'll be curious to see what his analysis is of, but I think he had as good a time as I did. So, I mean, it's just it's a melancholy feeling for me. I know some people over Thanksgiving dinner, you get in those typical arguments where, you know, one of your relatives says, oh, don't believe that crap. They'll be back next year and all this
they'll
stuff.
They'll do another farewell tour.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so either. I think that they're, as far as a touring entity and an itinerary, that kind of stuff, that's over. I'm not saying they wouldn't play a Vegas residency or something like that.
Yeah, one off.
But you know, hey, Joe, you guys probably know more about the band than I do because I'm just a fan like everybody else. I'm just basing what I have is just assumptions, you know. But I think they're done.
I do too. I think make Kiss with makeup performing live is done as we know it.
Yeah. Yes,
that's what I believe.
And it's going to end in New York where it should end. And, yeah. You know, why would you change that?
Bill, what's your take on whether it happens or doesn't happen, any involvement with Peter and or Ace?
I wish it would happen no matter what. I also, and they may strike me dead for saying this, but I wanted them to play during the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing. Whether, you know, I know it was risky and you don't know what Peter and Ace are going to do. And no, they're not Tommy and Eric, but I would have given it a shot. I mean, I'm a fan. What I go by is how the Unplugged thing went when they were all together. And I thought that was one of the most magical moments in Kiss history. And I was hoping, but I'll admit, I saw Ace a while back and he didn't live up to what I would hope he would have been. So, you know, I can understand Paul's reservations and Gene's as well, because you don't know what you're going to get. And you know, from what I gather, Peter's very happy right now. And that's great. And he may not even need it. But as fans, I think we'd like to see it like a best of. I was in line with Bruce's guitar tech for most of the line, Don St. Baker. And I was teasing him. I said, hey, what's Bruce doing? And he says, I'll tell you right now, Bruce isn't playing those shows either. And I thought, really?
Okay, nobody.
And he says, well, he says, I'm his tech, so, you know.
It's funny. Bruce just posted today. I saw someone ask him. Bruce made a Facebook post today about something about 80s Bruce saying hello. And someone asked, are you going to be at the December 2nd show? And Bruce, who's usually not very public when he talks, you know, about inside stuff, said, no, I have not been asked.
Yeah.
Not even asked. Wow.
But I will say this much, guys. If they see the same show that I saw last night, that's a great way to end it, man. Right. I went there very skeptical because, you know, you hear all the rumors about are they playing live and all this stuff. And I'm telling you, sure looked pretty
damn good
to me.
They're playing live.
They're playing live. I mean, there was a time when Paul cut his finger, and that was pretty bizarre. Like, I'd never seen it. Of course, I'd never been this close to a show. And I know there were mistakes. There was a little bit of sloppiness, but I prefer that in my metal bands, you know?
Right.
And the Indy Star guy that wrote the article, the review this morning, was pretty – he was fair. He admitted he wasn't a fan, and he was only 35 years old. But he says, I get it, you know? And I might disagree with some of his statements where he would say he didn't think the Kiss's catalog was strong enough to – compared to other bands of their era. Again, I'd argue with him that too, because that's what the Kiss Army was about the music. We wanted the music on the radio. We thought their music was as comparable as anybody else's.
Yeah.
But the review was fair. He said, you know, he goes, I can see why I get it now. He said, you know, so, I mean, and here was the weirdest statement. He said something about, this wasn't the best show I had seen all year in Indy, but it will be one of the ones I remember the most, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what Kiss wants you to do, right? Kiss wants you to remember them, good or bad. They want to know that they made an impression on you.
He didn't say that was the great musicianship or whatever, but everything else, the rapport with the audience, you can't knock them for their effort. I mean, I shake my head thinking, when I see Gene and them guys get on those pod things and fly around the arena, I'm like, I just don't get it, man. I mean, I know they're very careful, but I sure would be I would be careful because, I mean, at my age, you know, you just don't do that kind of stuff. So when I watch them do that stuff, I just shake my head and go, wow, 70-something years old.
The cherry pickers and all that.
The cherry pickers.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and they just go all around the place, and you don't know if those things are going to work.
Wow. What was the sound check like?
How's the what?
I've never been to a sound check. Was that pretty cool?
Well, and here's what's cool about it. For all those people that say they're not playing live, they need to come to the sound check.
Right.
Because by God, they are. And I would be fine with it I mean, if they would just play the sound check that way, the whole damn show. I don't need the pyro. I mean, the visuals are great, but like I said, one of my favorite Kiss shows was in the 90s when they did the convention stuff when they were all unplugged, because then I heard a different version of Kiss stuff. So, yeah, the sound check was fun. I mean, yes, they played pretty much a scripted sound check thing, but I like the way they do it, and they're into it. The Q&A wasn't as long as I would have preferred, but hey, I was in it, so I mean, how can I complain?
All right, you had a shout out.
I got, you know, so but I tell you, I just, you know, because you read a lot of crap and you're just thinking, okay, I'll go to this objectively. Let me see, because I don't have any skin in the game. I mean, I'm not getting tickets from them or anything, or red carpets or anything, and it's fine. So I saw for myself, and it was great.
They do some real deep cuts.
No, you're gonna get the stuff. You know, you're gonna get. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Say Yeah, and I'm not a real big fan of Cyclist. Well, and that's for Joe then. But you know those songs are gonna be in there, and you know, if you don't like those songs, the visuals are still great, that they're gonna get you through the songs.
Right.
Okay. You know, and Paul's banter between, you know, like when he'll talk before he plays Deuce, and he'll say, you know, here's something we did many years ago, and it's off the first album, and you know, that kind of stuff. Or
yeah,
this is, you know, he, it's like he's giving you the history of the band right there, mm-hmm. in as few songs as, you know, as any songs as they can fit into the schedule. So I was very happy with what I saw. Like I said, it was a melancholy thing, but if they're going to go out, I don't think anybody left Gainbridge last night. And I think I didn't see any empty seats. I don't think anybody left. Like Paul says at the end, did you get what you paid for or whatever?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And that's well put. And, you know, if they follow this through with Baltimore, Chicago, and New York, what a great way to get out, just leave. You know, I mean,
good.
What could anybody say?
Joe, thank you guys hear Joe's me and back. See me fine.
Yes, you're back.
Good Lord, that was really weird. It's like everything crashed at one time. Okay, so the good news is you guys can keep doing the show if that happens. Bill, thank you for being here. You and I have spent time together. We've actually, you and I were in Indy, and we shot a little 30-minute documentary together called Makeup of an Army, where you told your story. You guys that are watching this live right now, I'm going to make sure I post that on Facebook, so you guys can check that out.
It's on my YouTube channel too. I got
awesome.
And one of my favorite things you put together, very professional, and you know,
thank you very much.
Yeah, so check out my podcast stuff, because I try to include everything I can in there. As long as you do this stuff on YouTube, I can put it on my YouTube as well and add to the, you know, add to the thing where Gene and Tony Tennille are talking about me, you know, odd stuff like that.
That's weird. Here's a question. I was trying to follow along while I was troubleshooting. How about your emotions? Did you tear up at all? Did you, end of the show's happening? Did you get like, you know what I'm saying? You know, was it like, did it well up inside of you? This is the end.
Like the reunion. Well, I cried at the reunion.
No, I didn't because it was, you know, you see snippets of what you're going to see at the end of the show on other people's YouTube. And at the end, when the lights came out, I had fans coming up to me, people that I didn't even know were there, like Nico from Strike Force. Who I knew, but I never had met. And then Russell Daneker came up to me, and there was like guys I didn't know that were there in the audience. And they said, oh man, I got a copy of When Paul Talks About You or whatever. And, you know, we were all just kind of yapping and walking out of the room. Cause then they were forcing us out of there like crazy. You know, we weren't allowed to hang around any longer than 10 minutes or so. And they just started pushing us out the exits. Oh. So I can't say that I got emotional about it. I mean, cause the guy I'm with, he's going to see him in New York. So, you know, maybe that'll be his deal, you know, because,
yeah,
you'll get to see him then.
So, All right, so let me ask you this. You're sitting in there. You see the Kiss Army logo. Of course, you know, when you walk in, it's there. I mean, I can only imagine the kinds of flashbacks you must have. To, like, I know that you told me one point that when all this blew up for you, you actually sat backstage and talked with them out of makeup in the 70s. And just had a conversation backstage. And I remembered you saying, you know, it was just, it felt very surreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in 75, you know, we didn't have, they hid their identity very well. You know, I mean, there was this macabreness or some mysteriousness about them that the only person that really talked was Paul. And, you know, in real life, Paul sounds nothing like stage persona. So, you know, I'm sitting in a restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, eating pizza, not Chinese food, with Gene and Paul. And the guys at Rush are up in the bar. Oh. Ace and Peter are playing pool behind us. And they were just being really nice to me. They were entertaining me. And Gene said something funny. He goes, you know, we're not all buttholes in the music industry. And I think that was in reference to he saw me kind of get a little ticked off when I was at the radio station with Rich Dickerson and I going back and forth. But, you know, Rich was, he was just being Rich and spicing up the moment. And I wasn't upset or anything like that. And then you're thinking, here you get your time with Kiss. What do you saw? The first thing Jay and I said was, or asked us, hey, what's the second line in Deuce? I mean, like, what the hell? It's like Wayne and Garth, you know, and she goes, you know, I mean, that was what the first, and then with Paul, I think I asked him about what his hobbies were or something. At that time, he said he was collecting antiques. And then I asked him, what happened to the Firebird guitar on Kiss Alive? Because I never saw it anymore. And he told me it was broken in the studio. That's how weird we were when you're 18. You just talking with Kiss. You don't know what are you going to say to them.
Right. You know? What do you ask? Right.
And then when they come in, when they come into the room, they're all in platforms. So the only one you really could recognize is Peter, because he's that size, and everybody else has this jet. Everybody had jet black hair, ratted out like you wouldn't believe. So it was kind of hard for me to tell a lot of them apart until. You know, you got closer to Ace and saw his hair was a little bit different than Gene's and Paul's, but it was weird. And, you know, I have friends that I still talk to this day that were in another after party with me. And he said, that was one of the coolest times of my life was sitting in an after party talking to Kiss without their makeup off because you just didn't do that. And people always ask me, well, why didn't you have a camera back then? And I'm like, because it was respect. You knew you were being allowed to do something, so why would you mess up a good thing?
Right.
You know, I didn't. Absolutely. I unfortunately didn't carry a lot of cameras with me anyway during those times. So, a lot of the Kiss Army stuff, you know, I probably should have done a better job of documenting, but I couldn't. So, you know, it is what it is.
Bill, we've heard Kiss's version of your story so many times. Of course, I don't know if I've ever actually heard. The story come from you. I'm sure it's different. I'm sure it's not. Himself. It might not be as Hollywood as Kiss, but give us your version of the beginnings of the Kiss Army.
I was asked this by the guy at the A&E documentary, and because he heard, you know, Paul talk about it, and I told somebody else too after the show. I said, honest to God, we have never sat down one on one, any of us, and discussed it. I think one time Gene asked me for a picture of the kids surrounding the radio station. And I just politely told him, I don't know what picture you're talking about because that doesn't exist. And Gene looked at me like, it does. You know, I'm like, you just don't tell him you don't have it. Or I just said, it doesn't exist. And somehow I changed the subject or whatever after that. Here's what I have to say about that. And this covers all the bases. Yes, the kids did surround the radio station, but that was only after Kiss was in the radio station, down in the basement, playing disc jockey, because that was a whole part of the appeasement of, when they came to Terre Haute that day. We met him at the airport. The United States Army gave him a parade down Wabash Avenue very fast. And it was not unknown to a lot of the radio listeners of WBTS that Kiss was going to be there at this ranch house in West Terre Haute. And we had a lot of pictures taken. I mean, a guy that did an article on me the other day from the Indiana Business Journal, he was fascinated with the picture of me in the fire truck with Kiss. And he said, why did they do that? And I said, well, because of the, you know, firehouse, hotter than hell. And he said, well, do you know anything about the firemen? And I said, no, I think one of them's passed on, but his kids tried to contact me and all that. I said, it was just one of those spontaneous things where they're grabbing you and they're telling you, you pose for here, you do this. And somebody said, well, what happened about that crazy hat they put on your head? And I said, that was a coin doing. I said, I didn't own a army helmet or anything like that. So that was the closest thing they had was a construction helmet. So kids did surround the radio station, but because Kiss was in the radio station. So they were. I mean, there was practically a couple hundred around there too. And I just, people said to Starkey, it's a lot of balls for you to stay by that story. But, you know, I have to be faithful to my co-founder, Jay Evans. And we've always agreed that, you know, we were always going to tell it like it was. And it just because we have to, because and so to us, I like the way one Terre Haute writer, he said the Kiss Army was a lot like Chinese water torture. It was something that was done over many weeks and months to get their way through the radio station. And I was telling one of the guys that some of the tricks that the radio station used to do to piss us off was they'd play Love Theme from Kiss leading up to like the news. And then we'd call the station to complain because that's what you did with the request line. And they'd laugh at us and say, well, you wanted a Kiss song.
Really,
I think the other thing that would really bug us is they would play some, the typical stuff they would play, like the Aerosmith, Lynyrd Skynyrd stuff. And then they'd slip Strutter in there, but they wouldn't say who it was. And then we would call in again and say, hey, okay, you played something, but you didn't say who it was. And again, they'd say, you know, and to this day, we were told it was all in good fun, and probably was. And they led us on for several months. And somebody asked me, said, well, did you really write threatening letters? And I said, yeah, we did. But who's to say if they knew if we were real or not? I mean, we were cutting up pictures of Cream magazine with, you know, Kiss and the pyro stuff on that we could find and saying, you know, we would burn the station up. And then when it got really crazy, we would say that, you know, Kiss was better than the Beatles and Kiss was better than Zeppelin and all that. And we were really hitting it home. And you know, we were just having a lot of fun in my basement. I mean, I didn't have a job. Jay was getting ready to go to college. And here was my basement. What else are we going to do? It's like Wayne and Garth. But Jay was doing cool stuff, too. Like, he got a Radio Shack 8-track, and he was making blank. He was putting together Kiss set lists for people and just passed them out like sandwiches. You know, hey, here's Kiss. We like these guys, you know. And at the same time, we were catching crap from our kids and our fellow high school people because you wore your band's T-shirt to school like you would a sports jersey. Oh, yeah. And at that time, there were no Kiss shirts. Everybody had the Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Aerosmith stuff. And so, you know, a cool guy by the name of Rob Smith went in our print shop and he made our own Kiss shirt. So I brag and say that, you know, we made the first mass-produced Kiss shirt. And then we've got a couple pictures of it that we posed in the men's bathroom at Terre Haute in North Vigo. And, of course, we get the same response, kiss my ass, or the one that would really hurt the most was, if they're so good, Starkey, why aren't they on the radio?
Of course.
And what do you say? And, again, that was what motivated Jay and I more to, you know, get the Army going. And then eventually Jay saw his – I saw him twice. Jay and I went for the third show. Oddly and ironically enough, that was in Indianapolis. But then we took a whole bunch of kids with us, like two other carloads of curious people. And I guess by then, I guess you could say the seeds of the Kiss Army were pretty much sowed by April. And those same people, I've been told, also called the radio station and monitored things to make sure Kiss was getting played. And then when Kiss Alive, and see, this is where this is why I don't give pat myself on the back, because Kiss was, we were so lucky because in September Kiss Alive came out, and then WBTS was kind of forced to say, you know, hey, maybe we were wrong about these guys. And so they call me and say, can you bring over your albums? And I said, why? And they said, well, Rich threw them away, the original ones, and they admitted it. They admitted it. They threw their kids. They couldn't play the kids because they were thrown away. And so here I am with no job, no car, no anything. And I say, hey, Mom, can I borrow the car? And she says, why? And I said, I got to take my Kiss records over to the radio station. And she'd say, you and that Kiss stuff again, you know? And
incredible.
Yeah, well, and then can you imagine how she felt when she went to the show, you know, 2 months later in Hellman Center, and they called me up on stage? She was just blown away. Wow. I mean, when I came home, she had made a banner in my bedroom, you know. I mean, she had believed me then, because I said, you know, Kiss was going to come and they were going to sell out. And at that time, the only person that had sold out was Elvis, and she was at that show. Mm-hmm. You know, all the other bands didn't sell out. The Bostons, the Aerosmiths, you know, Chicago, Doobie Brothers. And that's why I tell people, that's how we got recognition, was when a Coin Management found out the band sold out. They were smart enough to say, what's going on here that you did? The other bands didn't sell out. And WBTS says that it was these two kids calling themselves the Kiss Army. And they've been badgering us for like 6 months, and that was it. They said, we need to talk to these guys. And then when they told me Kiss was going to wanted to meet us, I really wasn't sure I wanted to meet Kiss, because to me, they were like, it's like, you want to meet Marilyn Manson or somebody? I don't know. You know, but to me, they come off really, you know, I didn't want to meet Kiss. It wasn't an objective. We just thought that they deserved a fair shake, you know, and we still do, you know.
Not, just a magical time to not only your story, but, you know, hearing from a Kiss fan like yourself that started this Kiss Army from the time before Kiss. Again, because when I became a Kiss fan, I'm a little younger. I became a Kiss fan in 1979, and they were already the biggest thing in the world. So hearing stories about before they were that mega band, bigger than life band, and having people like you really push for them, where they were a little bit maybe the outcast and they weren't getting played on the radio and no one cared about Kiss and they weren't selling out. And then you being that catalyst for all that, especially in your area and your demographic, and then seeing them, you almost took that journey with them. It must be an incredible feeling to be part of that and go along that journey with them to superstardom.
I just tell people that I was very lucky, because if you look at it, I saw them. This is the timeline. I saw them opening up December of 74, and they were the second band on the thing with ZZ Top. And then I saw them play last to REO Speedwagon and a bunch of other bands 3 weeks later. They're their opening acts. In April, 4 or 5 months after that, they do their first headlining, and they do that with Rush. And it was a decent crowd, not a great crowd. This is April of 75. Well, think about it. Then all the way Kiss Alive comes out in September of 75. They come to Terre Haute and sell out, and after that, it was just gone. I mean, they were selling. I mean, that was it. I've never seen a band, and probably never will see a band, rise in that prominence in that way. I mean, that fast. And I was just along for the ride. Like I tell people, I was just really lucky. Who knows? If Kiss Alive had not come out, maybe we would never had any of this. We wouldn't be talking. You know, I mean, it was just amazing the timeline and the chain of events and everything that you know, how it came into play. So I just happened to be along for the ride, and I'll never trade it for anything. I don't care. I mean, there's a lot of people I know that, you know, the guy that took me to the show, he was a big 80s fan, and he has some great memories of seeing Eric Carr and Bruce and those guys, and that's fantastic. But I always tell these guys, I'll never trade anything you guys did for my deal, because I was just happy what I saw, you know?
So you're a school teacher?
Yeah. Going to work tomorrow, man.
Yeah. So all right, I knew you were a school teacher. So does Kiss ever come up in class? Like, did a kid ever come in wearing a t-shirt and you went, do they know about your history?
Well, the funny thing is, you see, I've seen, I'm in an urban school district, and it's always very funny to see the black kids come in with Kiss shirts, and they're usually girls. And I always inquire, say, do you know what that is or what is? And it's just that they're intrigued by the visual. I mean, and who would have thought, you know? But I've had a couple students, and I wanted to take their pictures and, like, put them up on my Facebook, but there's privacy things with minors, you know? And
right,
I just don't
right,
want to know
yeah.
that. Sure. But I wanted to just so people say, look what she wore at school the other day. She has no idea. Now, all my kids have phones these days, and they all have their laptops. And it's not uncommon to Google something. Well, it always takes one kid to Google Mr. Starkey. And then they find all, they'll see my YouTube stuff. And one of the kid asked, kids asked me one time, they said, I said, well, did you listen to any of the things what I had to say? And he says, no. He says, one of them's like an hour and a half. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's how long the interview went. And another kid said, and these were the this was the older kids, but then the younger kid, I remember, he said something about he said, oh, these guys are cool. They have their own coffins. Oh. And I told my brother that, and my brother said, he goes, well, they find out they have their own coffin or their own condoms too, because you'll probably be called in the office. But the last thing I'm going to say about the school thing is, and this is my favorite line, is when a couple kids will get together and they'll say, Mr. Starkey knows Kiss. And I'll say, no, Kiss knows Mr. Starkey.
Yeah. That's terrific. That's terrific. So, so there's absolutely no chance you're going to be in New York.
No. No. I got my New York last night. That was my New York.
That's great.
I have that in my mind, and I think that's what New York's going to get, and good for them, because it's great. So,
will you be watching the pay-per-view?
I don't know yet. I don't know. If I would, it would be with the guy that took me to the show yesterday, but he's going to be there. So, that's my answer to that. So,
yeah, the three of us will be there too, Bill.
That's like my Knoxville was supposed to be my last show.
And oh, man, that was terrible.
And I was so heartbroken. And I'm like, now I got to go to New York.
Yeah. I feel bad for Knoxville, because I was one of those people that I was reading everything just as intensely as you guys were doing, because I was going to know how that would affect my show. So when Knoxville got canceled, I really thought Indy was going to be canceled too. I was so shocked when it wasn't. And who knows?
I thought maybe all of them up to New York might be canceled to be sure he was recovered for those important, you know, New York, the last shows are so hyped and everything.
Well, let me tell you, he pretty damn well recovered last night. And
did he have any like voice issue, phlegm or
no. and I hear all this crap about, they say, well, his voice isn't what it used to be, but to me, it's good enough. He knows his limits, and it was great for me. I mean, like I said, I just thought there might have been a few guitar parts that maybe a little, you know, were a little off or out of tune kind of, but that's, I expect that in a high-end, high-energy metal show there's going to be. I mean, that's, you know, that's why it's live, you know? Yeah. So,
then you know it's live.
Yeah, you know it's live. You know damn well it's live. And like I said, I don't have a pony in the show or anything. I went there saying, well, it's like the one time I saw Bruce Springsteen. I'm like, I said, okay, impress me. And then you go, okay, wow, you did do everything